In June, Governor Cuomo signed legislation setting the state on the path towards creating a driver's license application enabling New Yorkers to signify their gender with an X, as opposed to limiting them to the binary male and female choices. Accompanying this development was the news that the state also reached a tentative settlement in a federal lawsuit stemming from the Cuomo administration's failure to already provide a more inclusive application form. A lawsuit brought on behalf of Sander Saba, a non-binary transgender New Yorker who wanted a driver's license that accurately reflected who they are. We spoke with Sander back in August of 2020 about the issue, so we wanted to check in with them following the recent developments. Welcome back to the show, Sander.
Thanks, Dave.
And also joining us again is Hannah Shanwan, a partner with O'Melveny and Myers, which worked with the Lambda Legal Defense Fund on this case. Welcome back to the show, Hannah.
Thanks so much for having me.
So, Sander, when we talked last year, you said you've come to expect not having your gender acknowledged by society. So given that reality, what was your reaction to the governor signing the Gender Recognition Act in June? Was it a surprise?
Well, I know that legislation like this had been proposed a couple of times before, and to be honest, I was more surprised when it wasn't passing than when it finally did pass. And so when it did pass, I was really excited about it. And at the same time, I was thinking, you know, why did it take so long? But at the end of the day, it was something as a really good development. So I am, of course, really excited about it. And something else that was passing through my head when I saw that was, I wonder how this is going to affect my lawsuit. So, you know, Hannah would have more to say on that.
Well, yeah, Hannah, can you explain the settlement that was reached in this case? And I imagine there's a deal probably similar to the language that's in the legislation the governor signed.
About a year ago, we started talking with the state about a process that they were going through to overhaul this ancient dinosaur of a computer system used at the DMV that was decades old and, in fact, had built right into the DNA of the system a binary program that only allowed for male or female with a zero or a one as part of something called a motorist identification number. And that number would get proliferated out through all kinds of records throughout the state. With the pendency of the legislation and then ultimately the signing of the legislation, we were able to work with the state to come to a resolution of when those gender X markers would finally and practically and really be available to non-binary New Yorkers. At first, it was a very, let's just say it was a bit of a moving target. but we kept pressing forward. We kept pressing on the litigation with a pretty robust schedule of discovery and motions and all the bits and pieces of litigation that apply pressure. And we were able to amicably work with the DMV and the state to prioritize when these licenses would actually be available, which is instead of this moving target of someday in the future, we now know it's going to be by June of next year. And that is fantastic.
In the process of working on this case, Hannah, did you find that the Cuomo administration and the DMV in particular were, I guess, negotiating with you in good faith? Did you feel like they were trying to come up with a realistic resolution to this, or did it seem like they were just trying to buy time?
Well, you know, I've worked in government at the Justice Department. I've litigated against government. I tend not to attribute a lot of good faith or bad faith one way or the other when there are bureaucratic systems in place. I can just say that red tape is real. I can say that bureaucracy and layers are real. And, I wouldn't say that we lacked frustration at times, but I've always believed in my fellow New Yorkers. I think I told you a year ago that I had a lot of faith that the state of New York, that the Cuomo administration and the people working behind the scenes diligently would get to the right place, and they did.
In case you're just joining us, we're talking with Sander Saba, a non-binary transgender New Yorker who sued the state last year for only offering a binary gender options on the driver's license application form. We're also joined by Hannah Shanwan, an attorney who worked on the case. And we're talking with the two of them because the state recently settled the lawsuit and signed legislation ensuring that future New Yorkers have access to a non-binary option on driver's license applications. Sander, when we talked in August, you were a law school student. Now you're a first-year associate. So obviously your life has been progressing while this case has been going on. How closely have you been, I guess, not only following the case, but as well as the legislative push for the Gender Recognition Act? Is this something that's been front of mind for you, or has it retreated to the back as you try to live your life?
Well, the case has definitely been really present in my mind at every step in my life. But I'll admit I wasn't following the legislation that closely. It's only that when my lawyers flagged for me that this was happening, did I really turn to that. But you know, the fact that I don't have a valid driver's license right now is a reality for me every single day that impacts me still. And of course, I'm very excited about the GRA and the settlement that we were able to come to. And next June is a fantastic development, but it's still challenging for me not to have a valid driver's license. And, you know, just waiting around for that is still a bit of a struggle. And, you know, as an associate, you know, I'm interacting with the law every day. And so I see things that my firm puts out and that other people are working on about gender issues and things like that. And, you know, it's kind of exciting to me that I get to be part of the conversation, not only as a lawyer, but as a plaintiff, as someone who is directly affected by the law, rather than someone who's just advocating on someone else's behalf.
In the interim, what do you do for an ID? Are you using some sort of New York City ID? Do you have another form of identification that works for you in the interim?
Well, I have a passport, and, you know, my birth certificate, but I haven't, I basically was able to fill out all the paperwork for my job and everything before my license expired. So that was good timing on that end. My license from Pennsylvania, that is. Mm-hmm. But yeah, now I just, you know, I haven't really been going out to restaurants or bars or anything because of the pandemic. So that's not really, that hasn't been exactly an issue, but it's mostly the fact that I can't drive. That's been really holding me back, I think.
Well, Sander, Hannah, do you want to add something?
Yeah. I just wanted to underscore that Sander's experience goes to show why these gender-neutral licenses and markers are so important. It's all about everyday dignity, everyday things that those of us who are binary New Yorkers take for granted. The ability to get a glass of wine at a restaurant, the ability to go to the airport easily and show your ID at the checkout at the security line, the ability to drive. These are simple, ordinary, everyday things that become so much harder in the absence of an accurate identification.
Well, and this binary choice isn't limited to just the current driver's license form that we are talking about, because there are other instances, not just in ordinary life, but also in interacting with state government, where you're presented that binary choice. And on this program, we've covered a lawsuit against the state over the benefits form and how that has a binary choice. So, Hannah, do you anticipate there will need to be additional legal actions, or do you think that the state is just going to take it upon itself to eliminate these instances where we have, I guess, arbitrary binary options?
I think it's a little early to see how this is all going to unfold. The Gender Recognition Act is young, fresh on the books, not even a few weeks old. I can readily anticipate that there will be some litigation or threatened litigation that will be necessary to drive the impact of this legislation forward into all the different corners of state agencies here and there. But I also expect that the state itself will take steps to both comply and to revisit old systems, old, you know, default approaches. And part of that process is just taking the blinders off. A lot of people don't even notice the binary options presented on the forms that they get every day at the doctor's office, at state agencies, on an application form, because their reality is a binary one, and it's just part of the fabric of every day. So I think it's part of the process, part of the dialogue, is letting people see what's in front of them and appreciating that actually those are not the only two choices that should be presented.
And finally, Sandra, when we talked last year, we talked about also about just sort of the general attitude that people have currently towards transgender or non-binary people, and the way the Trump administration had potentially given people, I guess, the authority or the okay to exercise and implement their demons, their, you know, the bad behavior that they might have otherwise felt too shamed to carry out in public. In the Biden administration so far, you know, the 7 months that we've seen so far, have you noticed any change in just general behavior, or is it too soon to tell, or is it possible that the genie's already out of the bottle and you can't put it back in?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. Right. You know, the people who were really empowered in the worst way by Trump and his rhetoric aren't going to just stop now that he's not in office anymore. But I think, you know, with Biden as president, and that has really shifted the conversation now, when instead of people coming out and saying, you know, really problematic and harmful things towards marginalized communities, towards trans people, queer people, people of color, instead of when they come out and say those things, it being in support of our government and what the government is saying, now they're coming out in opposition to it, if they're going to be saying those things. And that, I think, is really powerful, because they don't feel empowered by the administration. They don't feel backed by the administration. So it's just a different context, a different atmosphere. Just to bring it back to New York, I love living in New York. For a long time, I felt that, you know, I don't have to be so afraid here. When I was living in Pennsylvania, if somebody would make a comment to me about my sexuality on the sidewalk, which some people might be hearing this and thinking, how would someone know your sexuality on the sidewalk? Well, you know, I was walking home from a pride parade and I had some rainbow things on, or I was holding hands with my partner or something, you know. When people would say things, call out slurs to me, you know, I didn't feel safe when that would happen. And even if they weren't saying those things, just the idea that that might be going through someone's head, that it might be happening, would make me feel afraid. But in New York, it's kind of a different context, because in New York, you know, the people here, the culture is more accepting, more open. And like the GRA really exemplifies, you know, even our government is part of that conversation of being open and accepting and more progressive. And so when I'm walking down the sidewalk and someone says something to me like, you know, the F word, not the F word that's, you know, related to queerness. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I don't feel afraid. I feel a little offended, but also my reaction is that person is in the minority. And I'm not sure, I haven't looked at the statistics on this, so I don't know if that is an accurate thought, that that person is part of a minority way of thinking. But that's how I feel, because I feel like this culture that that I'm part of in New York, that most people would look down at a person who says something like that rather than let it happen or even support them.
I guess that's a good endorsement for our state then.
I have a slightly more depressing view on these things.
Please bring us down.
Yes. I can't help but notice that even against this victory that we're very proud of in this litigation, together with the signature of New York's Gender Recognition Act, that 2021 was a heartbreakingly record year for anti-trans legislation across the country, with more than three dozen states introducing a panoply of laws to suppress the voices, the medical care, the participation, and the visibility of our trans brothers and sisters. And, you know, they're entirely couched in the language of protecting children, when they will have the exact opposite effect of sending the message to so many children that they do not belong, that there's something wrong with them, that there is something ugly about them, from the laws to make it a felony to, you know, provide gender-affirming medical care, to the sports legislation that is, driven by, a boogeyman of secret men, secret boys on girls' teams, or, even the states that are passing the opposite kinds of laws than the ones that we are talking about today, looking to prevent non-binary gender markers in legislation that's been proposed in at least three states, Arizona, Montana, and South Dakota. That being said, looking back with the eyes of history, every civil rights movement has had its backlash. Interracial marriage, gay rights, now trans rights, women's rights, you know, black voting, black suffrage, black right. Yeah, it just every time there has been an effort to broaden the tent, to give more liberty and more freedom to more of our citizens, there has been a pushback. And 2021 has been a year of tremendous pushback. So, you know, we just have to keep pressing forward and celebrate these victories, celebrate the victory that we were talking about today, but not lose sight of the bigger picture here. So I guess that wasn't so down, but, you know.
Well, Hannah, I absolutely agree with that. I think it does highlight for me, you know, why I think New York City is a pretty unique place in a lot of ways. And so my experience here, I know, is not representative of many people's experiences across the country. It's certainly not representative of my experience outside of the city. You know, my partner drives us, you know, 20 minutes outside the city. And it's like, okay, now I have to now readjust my thinking to what is the culture here? What is what are the people thinking here? Am I as a human being going to be accepted in this space, or do I need to start pretending to be someone else to protect myself? These are things that I think about when I leave my safe neighborhood, my safe community here in beautiful liberal New York City. So I absolutely agree with everything that Hannah said.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. We've been speaking with Sandra Saba. They are a non-binary transgender New Yorker and a first-year associate. Sandra, thank you so much for making the time.
Thanks, Dave, for having me.
And we've also been talking with Hannah Shanwan, a partner in the New York City office of O'Melveny & Myers.
Thank you for bringing attention to these issues.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
Join us again for Capitol Press Room, a production of WCNY Connected, Syracuse.